Martin Short grew up kind of obsessed with show business. He was able to turn his childhood fantasies into a career as an adult. In his years on the comedy shows SCTV and Saturday Night Live, he became a one-man cast of showbiz characters. He created Jackie Rogers Jr., the albino lounge singer, and Irving Cohn, the elderly songwriter who's always in the middle of some anecdote about the old days. And Short perfected impressions of Jerry Lewis and Katharine Hepburn. But the character he became most famous for was a homebody, the manic and indecisive Ed Grimley. Last fall, Short developed a Saturday morning animation series for NBC TV called The Completely Mental Misadventures of Ed Grimley. Since leaving Saturday Night Live, Short has starred in the movies Three Amigos, Inner Space, and Cross My Heart. He's now co-starring with Nick Nolte in the new comedy Three Fugitives. Nolte plays a notorious bank robber who's just gotten out of prison. While Nolte is innocently at a bank making a deposit, Short busts in with a stocking on his face and stages a totally inept robbery. For protection, he takes Nolte as his hostage, and when the cops see Nolte, they can't believe he's just an innocent bystander. Martin Short, as the clumsy fugitive, gets to walk into poles, trip over himself, and do a lot of physical comedy. I asked him if he learned how to do physical comedy before he started acting professionally.
I think that physical comedy is something that you just have. When I was a little kid, I remember there was a neighbor across the street who used to make these lemon tarts for us. We didn't much like them, but she thought we did, and she was very sweet to make them. So my parents were out front, and they said, you know, go over and get the tarts from Mrs. Jameson, you know. And I said, okay. So I went over, and I was like nine, and as I was running across the street, I deliberately tripped and landed with my face in the tarts, and they would laugh, and I knew that it was like the easiest, fast, you didn't have to write, really, to get a laugh. And I think that some people can just do it. I think that also what was interesting for me to work with Francis Weber, the director of this film, was that I don't think that there's anyone who directs physical comedy better. And it is really actually very tricky and complex to make it correct, physical comedy, the way you shoot it, the way you edit it. You can't make yourself, it has to be real, but you can't look like you're really injured, and it's a fine line.
Ever hurt yourself while practicing?
No. I once was doing a piece in SCTV called Jerry Lewis Sings Dylan. And I was on top of an eight-page kind of podium, and I was in this bad outfit, and I was singing, "The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wah." And at the wah, a big wind was blowing, and at that point, all my clothes got ripped off, and I was just there in my underwear, polka dot, of course. But there were little strings attached to all my clothes. Well, they pulled, and the Velcro didn't go. So I went flying through the air and landed on my knee, which I'm still.
I shouldn't be laughing.
No, it was okay. But that was not out of me screwing up.
Right.
It was out of me foolishly writing that piece.
You know what you were just saying before about how when you were young, you used to buy the lemon pies from the neighbor, and you'd purposely trip and land with your face in the pie on the way home, make everybody laugh. When you were young, did you try to make your life into a sitcom as much as possible?
No, it wasn't that. It was just a sensibility in my family. I am the youngest of five, and everyone was funny. I mean, everyone was very funny. My brother Michael has won two Emmys for writing SCTV. He's 6 years older. Comedy was very normal in our family. Do jokes was to be normal. Insult each other was normal. It was an Irish family that could have bursts of anger and then be gone in 1 second. It's very interesting. I have this like opening of Christmas gifts from 1966, a tape that I put on when I was a kid, and I heard it this year, you know, and I was amazed. It was like a mental family. It was like screaming and shouting and then laughing within the next second. No particular rhyme or reason to it. And so comedy was very normal.
Martin Short is my guest, and he stars in the new movie Three Fugitives. Let's talk about some of the characters that you've created. Let's start with Ed Grimley, who you're still doing in animation for Saturday morning television. Who was the character based on? Was it based on a type of person, someone you knew, or was it a part of yourself that you imagined yourself being?
I think it's all those things. I mean, there were a couple of people that aspects of the character were based on. One was a guy I knew in high school who kind of talked like this. He kind of, his voice would go up. Oh, he was, his hobby was taking pictures. And he said, oh, I've taken some wonderful slides. You should really see them. And so that kind of quality. Then there was someone else that kind of talked like that. So I kind of put the voices together, and the enthusiasm for life, I guess, is an aspect of my personality. Ed is like the ultimate heart attack victim who has survived. You know, he just can't. He never did stop smelling the roses and being amazed at how wonderful life is. Everything is fascinating to him. If the phone rings, you know, he'll say, before he answers it, he'll stop and ponder, isn't the phone wonderful? There's always such a sense of mystery, I must say. You know, and it becomes very kind of a fascinating adventure to answer the phone. Well, in a way, it is. We just tend to be a little more jaded. So he developed in Second City stage, and I would do him around the house.
He does this great, he has like two different dances. There's the like I'm nervous dance, in which he puts one hand on his forehead and dances around in this really kind of uncoordinated fashion. And then there's the I'm happy kind of dance that he does. Where does that come from?
I don't know. I just, you know, I just do these dances, I guess. There's not much thought put into them.
Did you do these as a kid? Did you dance around when you were happy or nervous?
Yeah. I haven't changed that much.
You still dance around when you're
since
happy
I was a kid. Again, with these tapes I have. I used to tape a lot when I was a kid. My brother used to say that I was going to take the first 30 years of my life, listen to it, and then die. That would be, yeah. But my wife, Nancy, will listen to a tape when I'm 15 and be stunned at how similar it all sounds and seems. And, you know, she's someone who will say that, you know, she's, who was she when she was a teenager? Is she the same? You know, she's gone through different aspects of her personality, and it seems like there's a constant.
Did you ever see yourself as the kind of nerd-like character that Ed Grimley is?
No, I never really thought of Ed as a nerd. You know, when he first became popular, they would always refer to him as a pointy-headed nerd.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I was just skiing in some valley, and I kept thinking, you know, if I died, the headline would be Pointy-Headed Nerd Plummets, News at 4. But, no, I never thought of him as a nerd. I thought of him as this strange character living very contently in a life.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
What's it like to watch the cartoon version of yourself in character as Ed Grimley?
Well, when it at the beginning, it was unsettling because I didn't feel that they had the animation together yet.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, they didn't have the animation yet together. It was still it was like early Mickey Mouse, you know. And then like anything, the first year of any series is a learning curve and everyone improves. And the main thing you want to see is that learning curve happening, going up.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly by show 3, 4, you could see they were getting moves and they were getting the character. Then we started, they would actually tape me doing the script and send it overseas. And that was an enormous, you could really see the improvement. Now they were getting it. It's a hard character to animate because it's so based on improvisation. There's nothing set.
Martin Short is my guest, and he stars in the new movie, Three Fugitives. Let's talk about Jackie Rogers Jr. A great character.
It's very, now let me say something about you. That you like Jackie is very revealing because, you know, there are two camps on Jackie. People either find him totally, I mean, just hate him.
Oh, really?
Or they love him.
Oh, I love him.
Like the cast at SCTV, most of them didn't like Jackie.
Really?
Yeah, they thought it was just kind of grotesque. And we'd write these pieces, Dick Blasucci and Paul Flaherty and I would write these pieces, we'd take them in the read-through and they just kind of die, you know. But because the cast trusted me, they let me do it. And but I always like Jackie. Rock and roll musicians tend to like Jackie. Yeah.
Well, I like Jackie because he's so extravagant and so show busy.
Yes, he's also the most self-absorbed
yes.
character that I've ever done. I mean, I did a special a couple years ago.
He's a lounge singer for any of our listeners who don't know.
Who's also albino.
Yes.
And cross-eyed.
Mm-hmm.
His long white hair. And he once wrote a book based on life with his father, Jackie Rogers Sr., and it's titled, Damn You, Daddy, Sir. It's a bad laugh, too. That was the laugh. It's kind of your tongue. It's like a little dog with the tongue through the teeth. Anyway, Jackie's most self-absorbed. In a special I did a couple years ago, I had him thrown out the window by kidnappers. And he fell through the air, smashed through the top of a truck, landed in the cage of a lion. And as he was getting up, looked at his hands and said, gee, I never noticed what tiny hands I have. So it's like that kind of absorption that even that kind of terrible fate wouldn't affect him.
I think it's fair to say that one of his anthems is She Loves Me.
Yes, it was his dad's song. You know, she loves me and my amazement. I love her. What the heck does that mean?
Now, that's a Sheldon Harnick song.
Yeah.
He also wrote the lyrics for Fiddler on the Roof. And
right.
This is from the show She Loves Me. How did you, I think Jack Jones had the hit of it. How did you choose that song as the perfect showpiece for Jackie Rogers Sr. and Jr.?
I don't know. I used to go into the writer's office at SCTV, and I'd always be going, she loves me under my amazement. And they'd say, you should do a piece on that. And this is 1982. And I kind of said, well, I don't know if... this is an old subject matter, you know, lounge singers. But then I thought that I would do a short piece, a two-minute piece, on this character, Jackie Rogers. And if I had him die at the end of the piece, then it would be no problem repeating Turf. So we wrote a piece called Jackie Rogers, Old Mother Nature, She Loves Me, which was supposedly something that had been done in 71, and Jackie Rogers had been killed while doing it. Whilst doing it, as Ed would say. And they were finally releasing it 11 years later. And at the end, I needed someone to pop in and say, you know, watch the show. So I invented Jackie Rogers Jr., who was a white-faced albino, to pop in the circle and say, you know, I miss my dad. I hope you won't. Thursday's at 11. And then about a month later, Eugene Levy's wanted to do a piece with Bobby Bittman, his comic character, and Jackie Rogers. And I said, well, you're going to have to do the son. He said, well, no, I want to work with the father. I said, well, the father's dead. You know, we can't say now he's not dead. He said, well, bring him back. I don't want to work with that albino. But he did.
Now, you started off doing musicals, and I think you even had a cabaret act before you started doing
sketch comedy. No, I never, used to do cabaret shows.
Okay.
What's a nice country like you doing in a state like this? Stuff like that, you know.
Did you want to be a
singer?
The
apple tree. Yes, I wanted to be Frank Sinatra.
You did?
Senior. Yes.
Right. You know, I saw you sing, the one time I actually saw you sing seriously was on your HBO special, and
right.
you ended the show by singing Noel Coward's If Love Were All.
Right.
Not, yeah, If Love Were All. Yeah.
If Love Were All, yes.
And Paul Schaefer accompanied the piano, and he insisted,
yes.
made it really clear he'd never heard this song before. So here you were singing seriously, and I liked the way you sing. I never heard you did it before. But I was thinking a lot of people in the audience must be waiting for the joke, because no one's used to hearing you sing seriously.
Yeah, it was actually an unusual thing to do, probably, to do that. But, you know, it was interesting. I wanted that show to be a kind of a conglomeration of what my career had been, and that was certainly a part of it, you know, that I had been a singer. And it was interesting when you think back on how many, especially if you're a Canadian actor, how many different avenues your career can take you on. You know, and in Canada, you really do everything to live. It's like England. It's less, you work more, and there's less of a star system.
Well, one of the things that you did, you, I believe, hosted a top 40 rock show in Canada called Right On.
Yes, in 1973.
What was your persona as host like?
It was sad, really. It was, I had long hair, but I had no rock and roll feel at all. So, you know, I'd say, thank you, and stuff like that. And I think I hurt myself, you know. And it was live on CBC, 5 o'clock television, and I had no cue cards, and I would have to sing, you know, step into my life and feel reality. I mean, you'd have to, and if I was like, it was, I'd have to sing the top songs of that week. So if it was like Al Green, I mean, I would have to impersonate him, basically. Sit right down. It was just bad, you know, and I had these three fabulous backup singers who judged me because they clearly should have been hosting the show, and why was I? And I would forget lyrics and make them up all over the place. You know?
Why were you hosting the show? I mean, you were really more into Frank Sinatra than rock and roll.
Well,
right?
It was a job. It was a job. I think it was paid $250 a week, mind you.
No, I mean, why did they hire you?
Oh, I was in a show, Godspell, and I was kind of, energized. I don't know. Foolish them. I could sing, and they thought, well, that's good, and he's kind of personable. They just made a mistake.
Was there any choreography on the show?
No, there was no choreography.
I ask this because in some of the SCTVs where there's like the chorus of male dancers and a
yes.
production number,
the you Jewel were sometimes Hallmeyer dancers.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
And you were sometimes in the chorus. And I figured, oh, this is like some kind of weird fantasy of
no,
yours.
No. I never want to be in the chorus. It's too kind of in the chorus. But certainly what was the best part of doing SCTV in the tradition of Second City was that sometimes you were the lead in a piece and sometimes you were in the chorus of a piece, but it was a company working together.
So do you want to sing straight now? I mean, would you like to be able...
No, I actually have no desire to sing straight, only because I think that it is a stigma. They are waiting for the joke, and if they're distracted that way, it doesn't work. It's hard to become... It's very difficult to do what you've satirized. It's very hard. And it's best not to. I would love to, now, I mean, a dream is to do like a fabulous Broadway musical, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Where you're playing a character, that's different. Martin Short to come out and sing, you know, What Now My Love? I'm better doing Bobby Short than Martin Short.
We talked about some of the characters that you created for a sketch comedy. Let me ask you about one of the impressions that mm-hmm. you did, and that's of Jerry Lewis. I think you're really good at it because... You know physical comedy, and you can capture the kind of goofy aspects of Jerry Lewis, but you also get the kind of dark side, the bitter side, and the ego of the man. What interests you in Jerry Lewis?
Well, I think initially as a kid, because he's a huge influence, would be the comedy. I mean, as a kid, seeing The Delicate Delinquent, which was my favorite, I just found it so funny. He was so funny to me. I think, again, maybe keeping in the idea that maybe comedy is often best... I mean, I've never done stand-up, and so
right.
verbal banter is not intrigued me as much as is interaction, but also surprising the audience. Never, you know, constantly giving 90-degree turns. And Jerry, who would suddenly go, "Wah!" You know, at the top of his lungs, always, it just made me laugh because it was so mental. Finally, you know, but then when the other aspects of the personality start to crop up, well, that's even more fascinating because it's like a kind of fascinating painting that you can do without it being obvious. Again, as surprising as the scream is the other aspects of the personality.
Do you see Jerry Lewis in a way as being a cautionary tale about what could happen in show business, the way an ego can get out of control?
Well, I don't know. I don't like to, you know, I don't want to judge anyone.
Okay.
I think that in general, it's best not to take yourself overly seriously.
How do you rehearse to do him? Do you steady him before doing him?
I would start singing. Gotta get my old tuxedo pressed. Gotta smile, hold notes, and shake. And I tell you what a joy and a thrill and all good stuff. You know, you just kind of... I would suck a lozenge, imaginary lozenge. I don't know why. It's not like he does a lozenge. But it's just an idea of, you know, an attitude. And sometimes you just hear people... It's like music, you know, you hear it and you just kind
yeah.
of get the placement
yeah.
in the voice or the throat and nasal or Robin Williams, very kind of like that, you know, there's more back there, you know, so you just kind of play.
Have you heard from any of the people who you've done impressions of?
Well, Robin's a friend of mine, so he finds it very funny. And Jerry Lewis said that he found it very funny.
That must have been a relief.
Yes, it was, because you don't want to irritate someone that you admire. And Hepburn, I don't think she stays up late. That late. Or cares.
Martin Short is my guest, and he stars in the new movie, Three Fugitives. Now, I've read about you that when you were young, you used to do an imaginary TV show in your room that would run on alternate weeks in your imagination with the Andy Williams Show.
Yes, that is very true, and we were canceled, too, finally, which is a tragedy. Hullabaloo, I think, replaced us. Yes, I used to, it was 8:30 Mondays in my mind.
Right.
And we'd tape ahead, you know, we'd have shows in the can, and I'd type things up for TV Guide, you know, highlights Marty will sing, and I would come out, and I had a Frank Sinatra the Sands album, so I used that as an applause record, and then, you know, I'd use intros from albums, and I'd have a guest, you know, my guest would be Tony Bennett, and Tony would come out and say, "Forget your troubles, come on, get happy, the Lord is waiting to take your hand." I'd sing another song, I just don't remember the words, you know, and he'd be my guest, and then I would, you know, sing with him, you know, with the record, and then I'd go to the applause, and I'd, you know, piece it together, reel to reel. And then I would take, you know, the Playboy of that month and do the interview with Elbridge Cleaver or something, and, you know, I'd sit and you say that we're not moving fast, and, you know, and I'd then read his part, and then I'd end with a medley, and then someone would call dinner, and we'd tape later.
Did you sit on a stool and sing like Perry and Andy used to?
Oh, sure, yeah. But sometimes I just throw that stool aside and belt out a big final.
Because that's the kind of informal guy you are.
There was no one restraining me.
So, who were your sponsors?
Bulova Watch was a biggie. And the Kraft people.
they did.
No cigarettes even then.
They did Perry Como.
Yeah. Kraft. Well, I know. They were very generous to help me out as well.
Why, if you were doing an imaginary show, would you have it alternate every other week with Andy Williams? Why not be on every other week?
How could I do my films?
Every week, I mean. What?
How could I do my films?
Oh. Yes.
Remember,
yes,
I was directing as well.
No, when you were doing these shows, were they serious in your mind, or were they parodies of the show? I mean, were you doing them for real, or were...
No, it was real. I had a fantasy world that wouldn't quit, you know? I mean, I would... If I got on the back of a bus, I would go... If I got on a bus, I would go to the back of the bus, where the windows were kind of oval shaped, you know,
mm-hmm.
So that it would, I'd have more of a sense of riding in a limousine. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and if I looked out the window, or I'd pretend I was, you know, on an airplane taxing off, and fans had, you know, this is a 10. I was just intrigued by it. It wasn't something, it wasn't like Rupert Pumpkin, or wasn't it?
Rupert Pumpkin, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't that sick, you know, it was clearly a fun hobby. You know, it was fun, and while other kids my age were protesting, you go to have a revolution, I was up in my room singing, "Weather-wise, it's such a cuckoo day," you know. But certainly in no way did it become something that I, you know, would answer to two different names or anything.
Did your imaginary show have a theme? A song?
No, there would be a production number, you know, kind of opening, which would be similar, where dancers come out and go, "Marty, it's time for Marty." But, I mean, that wasn't a real theme.
Oh, what a nut.
Yeah. Sad, huh?
I think it's great. When you were young, you obviously had all these show business fantasies in your head, and you imagined yourself being everybody in show business, the hosts of the shows, the guest singers, the interviewers, probably the dancers as well. Could you explain why you were so caught up in show business when you were young? And what did show business mean to you when you were young?
Oh, I think it was, why was I caught up on it? I don't know. I mean, certainly my family were fascinated by it, so you get it from your family. Not overly, though. Not as much as I.
Well, your mother was a classical violinist.
Yes, she was.
It's not exactly show business.
No, but still, we all watched the Ed Sullivan Show. We all watched these shows, you know. I think that obviously there was something brewing inside me that wanted to perform and wanted to, that from an early age, I knew like the man who knows from an early age that he wants to be a doctor because he cuts open a little frog and just stares at it when he's five. I was whipping a fry pan cord as a mic when I was 8 around the house.
So now that you're really in show business, making movies,
yes,
and doing comedy, yeah, the real thing. Does it measure up to? Is it everything you hoped it would be?
Oh, it's great. It's odd, you know, when your fantasies become your reality. Then you are out of a fantasy, but it generally is fabulous. I have a fabulous life. Certainly, it's work, though. I mean, that's the reality. The first job I had in Hollywood was a show called The Associates that I did, the Jim Brooks show that I did with Wilfred Hyde White, and this is 1979. It was about lawyers, and it was very actually well-written, done show. And the first week it was done in Paramount, and I'd walk around Paramount and say, this is Paramount, look at it, look at that, there's the sky painted blue. And then by the second week, it was, I got to go to rehearsal. I don't know. What is this script? My character isn't developed this week. You know, and it was back to worrying about, and I could have been back in Toronto doing something for the CBC. It was just about the work, suddenly.